Okay. It's a pleasure to call to order the November 9th, 2009 meeting of the San Francisco Ethics Commission. Let me take the order. Commissioner, the role, Commissioner Hansen.
Present.
Commissioner Guzikuma.
Here.
Commissioner Ward.
Here.
Commissioner Harriman is excused and notified us earlier that she would not be able to join us this evening. Is there public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda? We know that you know that it would all have to be within the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission. Thank you. Thank you. We look forward to getting there expeditiously. Item 3 relates to consideration of the remaining possible amendments to the Commission's regulations for investigations and enforcement proceedings, which we've dealt with previously in May and October. We now have several additional items, including both the technical amendments that were carried over and as to which we requested some staff itemization so that we could address them, and some substantive issues. You'll notice that at your place there is a corrected document. If you look at the front page of the one that was waiting for you on your desk, you'll see that there are 3 changes on page 1. In the final sentence of the first paragraph, the word not was inserted. There were just 3 things that had fallen off the page that was sent to us. So the sentence now reads, the commission did not approve or reject point number 2. In the list of 4 parts, number 1 now includes the word directors for executive director's authority. And number 4 was just not contained on the page and has been added. Am I correct? The rest of the document is the same?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. We will begin by walking through this. Is it acceptable for you commissioners for us to do as we've been doing before and do it decision point by decision point? It's been structured to allow us to segment it that way. Works for everybody? Thank you. Okay. We will then take each of those items in order, then take public comment, and then vote on the item if there's a motion bringing it forward. Or yes, take a motion, take public comment, and then act on the item. So we have before us decision point 2A relating to section 4A, which appears on page 4. Do any commissioners have comments or questions? This relates to the executive director's dismissal of complaints and the whole preliminary review process.
I move to approve the decision point 2A as drafted by the staff.
Second.
Okay. Is there anyone who would like to speak to any of the issues captured in decision point 2A? It applies only to actually paragraph 4A. That's the limited point that we're talking about here. The rest of that provision comes later. Okay. Any comment? Commissioner Hansen?
Thank you. I had a comment slash question. The language on A is the executive director must conduct a preliminary review and the inquiry may include reviewing, et cetera. I will support this. I'm a little concerned at the use of the term may. I don't have a better solution, because must include reviewing these documents would not make sense in all cases. However, it seems to me that the use of the term may could then imply that none of these things would be done. And it seems to me that, generally speaking, although executive director may correct me if I'm wrong, that at least some of these things would need to be done in the main. I'm just not sure how to address it.
Well, normally we would do as much as possible with what's provided at the time the complaint is made. If there are documents, we would review them.
Right.
But sometimes when people make complaints, the documents they hand you are old Life magazines,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's code in them. So you get where I'm going with this. And sometimes you want to talk to the respondent, and sometimes it's too soon. Because in some investigations, you don't want the respondent to know they're being investigated until you are ready for that. Mm-hmm. Because of what respondents can sometimes do if they know they're being investigated.
No, I completely understand that what this language implies is that a preliminary review might include actually doing nothing,
but making your judgment call that there's nothing to be done.
Yeah.
I think I see, or at least there's a possibility that might address both your concern and the judgment that we need the executive director to be able to make about what's appropriate. I wonder if flipping that sentence, and editing on the fly has its dangers, but if the second sentence read, this inquiry shall include sufficient inquiry or an appropriate inquiry to determine whether a full investigation is warranted, and may include those examples. The idea being, he or she could still say no inquiry is warranted, or the inquiry is facially, you know, this is about code in the Life magazine, but at least it would not make the last part a may. And I wonder if that's any help, that it's really just defining what a preliminary review is, which is the inquiry necessary to determine whether a full investigation is warranted.
And from my reading of the first sentence, the executive director must conduct a preliminary review of each formal complaint.
It's doing it.
Suggests that if he doesn't do any of these things, he hasn't conducted a preliminary review.
Would you say that's the case, even in the case of a Life magazine being the evidence?
Yeah.
And you just look at it, and on the surface you say, that's my preliminary review.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how much is furnished by the complainant. But, yeah, I mean, we look at everything they give us, even if it is a Life magazine, and they say, guess what, this, you know. We would still look at it. I don't think that we would try to crack the code.
Preliminary review done in a very short amount of
time. My greatest fear would be that they would be correct, and years later we all find out.
Exactly, right.
Right. Well, and the other day, at our last meeting, you said there may be times when it's relatively simple to determine that there is reason for concern, and that the preliminary review only requires one of these things, but the form hasn't been filed or the, you know, error has been made that's the basis for the complaint, and so the review is also short in that case, but it moves quickly to say this has, you know, appears to have the necessary substance.
Like I said, I'm not sure there's any way to deal with it, and some of this is just trusting that, you know, your judgment is going to be appropriate. Could I just ask one other question while I have the floor, and that has to do with B, which I know is not on the floor, but as we're talking about the word may, the language in B, there's just a typo at the end of B that at some point I'd like to be able to correct.
I was going to do that next.
Oh, okay,
I agree.
Thank you.
Why don't we act on this one and then we will clean up the next paragraph.
Thank you.
Another careful reader. A motion's been made and seconded. Is there any public comment on decision point 2A?
David Pilpel, probably not worth including in the minutes, but I just wanted to note, since you were talking about Life magazine, there was an important article in Life magazine in the early 70s about former mayor Joe Alioto, which might have included something that had bearing on something were it published today, but I don't remember the particulars. But I do remember that thing about Life magazine. So not diss it too quickly. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much. Commissioner Hansen, do you want to note for the record the problem with 4B?
Certainly. So on 4B, the fourth line down, starting with allegations do not warrant further action for reasons that my include should be may include. Do I need
to
make a motion or so noted? And
it could just be part of a motion, too.
Right. When we are looking at the elements here,
okay.
And this might be interesting. The decision point asks us to make a selection among the criteria that might guide the determination, the standard for dismissal. And the staff has given us four options. One, the one that was presented originally, and then three others that reflect variations based on the conversation that we had last time. Would anybody like to begin the discussion? Would anybody like to go back to law school all over again?
My selection was C. Credible evidence clearly refutes the allegations, and then I made a note that said incredible should be defined.
I wonder if is this something where the staff or Mr. Shen might want to speak to what you see as the differences among them, the pros and cons, and on that particular point, is there a definition of credible that we would be adopting it or referring to if we use the word credible here? Where would we turn if somebody wanted to understand that?
Yeah, I don't have any definition of credible. That would be different than the ordinary common sense, hopefully something that conforms the dictionary definition of credible. As to the differences between, although we can certainly offer a definition today if you choose to go that route, there's certainly nothing precluding that. And I'm sorry, the other question you had was how we would distinguish between A, B, and C?
Yeah, I just if there's anything either of you wants to add to that.
No, I mean, I guess the difference between A, B, and C is just where you want the scale, I guess, in terms of the believability or credibility of the evidence, which way you want that scale to tilt at the outset. But as to exactly, I guess I don't have much more to add to that. Richard?
I'm not prepared just to wave off the definition of credible, because I think it ought to be an objective rather than a subjective determination. So let's figure out how we define credible.
And one thing I'm happy to do, and maybe we can go on to some other points or return to this one, is run down to my office and grab something like Black's Law Dictionary to get us started, or just an ordinary dictionary for that matter. If you think that would be helpful, I'm happy
sure.
to do that. That would take just mm-hmm. a couple minutes.
Sure. Yep. Okay. And while folks are thinking about this one, that would be helpful. I took them to be not just three steps on the same spectrum, but two refutes and clearly refutes as a difference in degree, but does not support is kind of the presumption runs the other way. Right, there's no credible evidence for the allegations. The allegation is not supported by credible evidence, or there's evidence to refute. So it didn't seem to me just three steps on the same scale. And then I got really started to wonder what we were trying to accomplish or what burden we wanted here. So we can come back to that because the definition might be helpful.
When you come back to it, you can think about this, I guess. A and C are not mutually exclusive, so you can include both of them if you wanted.
And that was my proposal, to combine the two.
So, let's see. Credible evidence does not support, and also there is credible evidence that refutes.
Instead of 1, 2, 3, 4, we'd have 1 through 5.
My proposal was to just change the language of C to combine C and A, so I had credible evidence clearly refutes or does not support the allegation.
So that would be fine as well, yeah.
And then I had the same question that Commissioner Ward did about what credible is. But okay. To me, the combining of the two gave me the strongest standard that I could come up with.
Okay. There's an or.
Or, yeah.
How is that stronger than...
Well, because one goes in one direction, one goes the other direction. Mm-hmm. So it could be, I guess we could say and or, but I was looking for both possibilities.
Yeah. Just procedurally, since Mr. Shen has left to get the definitions. I'm thinking that it might make sense to have... No, that's speedy. We've continued to talk about this and some other options. And we've had some discussion, and Mr. Pilpel clearly wants to weigh in as well. So if people are comfortable, let's just stay with this one while you offer credible to us so that we can keep such thread as we have developed here.
Okay.
Do you want to tell us what?
Sure. So I'm going to just start with just a Webster's Dictionary definition. I guess it offers two definitions, the first being, first definition being offering reasonable grounds for being believed. The second definition being of sufficient capability to be militarily effective. Not as helpful.
Not in San Francisco. Like credible force, is that where?
Credible dictionary.
Credible and Black's Law Dictionary, although probably a very old edition. Worthy of belief or entitled to credit.
Commissioner Ward, does that achieve the objectivity you were looking for?
No.
No, but I'm not going to make up a definition.
Right. Mm. Worthy of belief, entitled to credit.
Right. So again, I'm sorry. Black's Law Dictionary offers either worthy of belief or entitled to credit. The Webster's Dictionary.
Reasonable grounds for being believed.
Offering reasonable grounds for being believed. And the second one, again, not being so useful.
That's probably
the reasonable standard.
I mean, that doesn't incorporate usually an objective element or an objective perspective, at least.
Yeah, I like the Webster's reasonable.
Would are you? We had a definition section for this, didn't we?
Yes.
So, is your suggestion that we actually add one into this?
Yeah, you would need
enforcement
to add
regulations.
A new E for a definition of credible, and then renumber the following definitions accordingly.
Is there any reason not to add a dictionary, a definition that comes from the dictionary? Is it helpful to people to have to know what we were expecting?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's helpful to include a definition. Mm-hmm. I mean, it certainly does no harm.
My question would be, just in terms of potentially doing harm, is if we have defined credible, or if credible is defined somewhere else in the code, charter, I mean, I don't want to come up with a definition that runs counter to a definition that we're already using somewhere.
Yeah, that may take me more than a couple minutes to determine whether there's any other definitions in either municipal code or the charter. I haven't seen any others, but certainly there are many parts of the code I'm not familiar with. I'm not aware of any others, at least in the sections of law generally within the Ethics Commission's jurisdiction, at least.
Okay. So at the moment, we're just discussing. We don't have a motion on the table, but you may want to make one that includes that if you, in just a moment. Did you have any other comments or questions? Any other commissioners want to discuss any part of this?
On the definition specifically?
Or on the standards, the, you know, in one place they're A through D, at the other they're numbered 1 through 4. We heard a couple of suggestions when we broke to listen to the definitions. Commissioner Hansen, you had suggested the language credible evidence clearly refutes or does not support the allegations.
And I would modify that to and or if that addresses Commissioner Fusakuma's
question. Well, yeah. Commissioner Schnelli, just for the clarification, the A through D,
those are the four choices that go under number one on page four of the regs.
I understand.
Okay.
It's just some people were referring to the choices as by letter and some by number, and I was just pointing out that they're the same text, but the numbering. Okay, I understand. These are all the entries that we will turn into number one when we get finished. Yes. Is someone inclined to make a motion on?
I would be selecting C.
Not the combined.
If someone wants a combined one, then they should make the motion.
I'll make that motion.
Okay.
Do you want to make a motion first, or do you want me to go ahead and do that?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So I would make a motion that 4B1 would read, credible evidence clearly refutes and or does not support the allegations.
Do I hear a second for that version?
May I?
Certainly.
I think I would prefer Commissioner Hansen's language, because in the absence of evidence refuting the allegations, if you have evidence that says the allegations are baseless, then you don't need evidence that refutes them. If you have evidence that refutes them, then you don't need evidence, you know, and there's no evidence to prove it.
Mm-hmm. I'll second the motion.
Can you say that again? Because I'm not understanding that.
If sometimes there's evidence proving something, and sometimes there's evidence proving that something happened. Sometimes there's evidence proving it didn't.
Right. That's clearly refuting.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, so one is refuting and one is supporting. The way Commissioner Hansen's reads is you can have one or the other. You don't need both.
That's not how I read that.
Because I think with just C, I need to have evidence refuting the allegations made. So
not,
you know,
just a failure to support them.
Right.
But at that stage, then it just goes on to investigation. I mean, why is that so crucial to have? The reservation that I have is at this stage, I mean, look at the other ones. Look at 4B, 2, 3, and 4. I mean, these are, you know, allegations, if not true, don't constitute a violation. The complaint contains expressions of opinion. Allegations are already under investigation elsewhere. I mean, these are reasons that really almost automatically or very early on you would dismiss the complaint without any further inquiry. So I think the standard should be pretty high if you're going to be dismissing it that early on, which is why I like C. So if you clearly have, so it was the mayor didn't go somewhere as he was supposed to, whatever, and then you have pictures that he was actually there discharging his duty, clearly refuting. Therefore, yeah, do you have to look at that any further? No. Do I have a problem with that? No. But at this stage, I think the standard has to be higher, because what if you don't have time to do all of this stuff? I mean, I really would rather us look further into something then dismiss it that early without a little more information gathering.
Can I just ask, if we don't have evidence that refutes, and this was my concern as to and why I combined the two. So if we don't have evidence that refutes, I was concerned, even though that's my first choice of the ones that were presented, because it seems the strongest to me. It seems to present the highest standard. But I was concerned if we went with C and did not have evidence that refuted the allegations. We only had evidence that didn't support the allegations. So there were allegations made. We could not find enough supporting information to move it forward. I was afraid we would dismiss it too early all we had was not enough information to move it forward. And that's it seemed very general and very a low level of standard. We just did not have doesn't make sense? No. So,
because I don't want that to happen either. I don't want something to be dismissed because it doesn't appear there's enough support for
right.
it yet.
Right.
So the only instance in which I would want something dismissed at this early stage, if there's credible evidence that clearly refutes mm-hmm. that complaint, essentially. Mm-hmm. What I mean, it was a poor example with Mayor Newsom in the picture, but you know what I'm trying to get at. So if there's clearly something that says, you know what, this complaint is really wrong. It's completely off base, whatever. Only in that instance would I want a complaint to be dismissed so early.
I understand what you're saying, and I actually, just in hearing what you're saying, I think you're right. I think that what I'm trying to do is create a stronger standard, and I think it weakens it. So if we said and, maybe that would strengthen it, but I'm not sure that that's necessary. So I'll go back to my original thinking that C is probably the strongest of the ones that we have in front of us, and maybe C's good enough on its face.
And we can live with that.
Okay.
So would you like to restate your motion?
I'll withdraw my motion.
Do you want to make a motion for C?
Sure. I'll motion that for B1 would read credible evidence clearly refutes the allegations.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that one too.
Mr. Pilpel.
Thank you. We're probably all on the same page at this point. I was going to speak in support of C. I liked the approach that was coming from this side of the world. I believe that at the last meeting I actually suggested the clearly standard, so maybe I get a point, maybe not. Where you were going with this to say that at this early stage that anything that's got a shred of possibility should be carried forward, I think makes sense, and I think that's what Commissioner Gusakuma just articulated. This entire section adds more heft to this preliminary review that did not exist in the prior scheme. So it suggests that there be a facial check that's more than just the allegations in the complaint. And so if there's enough stuff to kick it out at that point, but only if there's enough stuff to kick it out, should it be. And I'd note two other things, and perhaps this is getting slightly into 2C, that in the event that it is dismissed, there is a monthly report or monthly summary to the commission, including the reasons for dismissal. So if the commissioners feel that there were enough reasons to warrant investigation, you could reinitiate the matter. Further, 4B suggests that these may dismiss the complaint for reasons that may include. So these are examples of reasons. These aren't the only reasons. There may be, under the specific facts, just cause for dismissing a complaint at that early stage. And finally, on page 5, that first paragraph, if the executive director dismisses a complaint under the section, shall take no action except, I would suggest inserting there, except he or she may, and then 1, 2, or 3, because it doesn't read as well as it could there. But that's probably into decision point 2C, as you will properly point out to me in a moment.
I will pick up the grammatical point separately because I had same concern, different fix.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Am I correct that you're the only member of the public?
As far as I know,
evening?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Although the evidence may clearly never. Thank you.
The podium makes it hard for me to be absolutely sure that there are no other.
It will alert you if there's
here.
A change.
The motion's been made and seconded. We have the benefit of public comment on the adoption of a standard for, number one, credible evidence clearly refutes the allegations. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Commissioner Ward, thank you. Commissioner Ward, would you like to make a motion about the definition so that we don't forget to do that?
I move that the a definition be included for the word credible. And so I'm not sure where it would go.
It would be added as inserted as item E, and then the others would be fall from that. So
following the word complainant, we'd have a new definition of credible in 2E.
Would you just like me to reread the definition?
The first one from the dictionary. Yes,
okay.
Please.
Great. Just for the record, credible is defined as offering reasonable grounds for being believed.
And we'll include that exact wording. Plagiarize, I don't know what it may be.
Yes. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Public comment?
Can I just ask if adding this definition requires renoticing for this section, since there wasn't any suggestion that there be a definition of credible? I don't know.
I don't think it's a major.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's fairly within the scope of the of the notice.
Since the word credible was here
reference.
And an element
okay.
of this,
I don't care. I just don't want anyone who's not here to say.
Fair point.
Thank you.
With respect, Mr. Pilpel commented about just the grammar of that sentence. It's a structure that's repeated throughout this, and it was not specifically noticed, but it caught me each time I read it as well. I had a slightly different suggested change. So one question is, can we suggest this smoothing all the way through? If I recall, your change was, shall take no further action on the complaint except that he or she may. And mine was, except number one, comma, to inform. In each one of these, to add the word to in each item, and you can't add it before the numbers because it goes in a different place each time. But except one, to inform, two, at his or her discretion to issue, and three, at his or her discretion to refer. So I'm agnostic about which one we choose. I just think that I found myself stumbling each time. Is that a change that requires a motion or not?
Oh, yeah, you need a motion, but, you know, it doesn't create a notice.
It is
not,
right. Yeah. I figured that. Would someone else like to make the motion?
Yeah.
Except that he or she may. I actually like Mr. Pilpel's better because it requires only one change at each spot, unless somebody sees that it's not workable. Except that he or she may, at every time we have this formulation, which is several times in the document. Is there a second for that motion?
Second.
Thank you. Public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, we're moving on to decision point 2C. This relates to the other items that we were talking about. So we've actually had some discussion of these already, and they are the same items that we had before us. They're the other standards for dismissal at this stage. Is there something? Would you like to add something?
Move to approve. 2C as written or proposed.
Second. Commissioners, any discussion or questions? Public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. 2D, this is relating to the additional language at the end of the last paragraph in 4C, which appears on page 5, and it's the paragraph that begins, if neither the district attorney nor city attorney. Move to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? I found this rather confusing, at least as to the within 14 days, and because it's ambiguous to me whether it is if neither intends to pursue an investigation within 14 days or if neither intends to pursue, then within 14 days of such notification, the executive director shall. At the very least, it seems like there's an extra comma between notification and the to make clear that it goes with the second part, not the first part.
if indeed I'm reading it correctly and that's what it is intended to say. Then somebody else can be thinking at the same time why it says within 10 business days in the previous sentence and 14 days here. Do we have a standard about when we count business days and when we count all days? Is it the number of them, which in some settings is the standard? You know, 30 days, we don't expect it to be 30 business days, but...
There are definitions elsewhere that are...
But they don't address this. It says what a business day is, but it doesn't say when you want, when you use which kind.
That's a fair point.
It was a long airplane flight. Made longer.
Could I add another point of confusion?
Yeah, I have a third one, too.
Yeah, go ahead. The third line, where we use the language that he or she has taken or plans to take, refers to the executive director. But on first quick read, I paused at that line and wondered if we were referring to the district attorney or city attorney as he or she. Now, obviously not, as you read the content, the executive director is not going to be informing the complainant of the action of the district attorney or city attorney, but for people who don't necessarily understand the process, I wonder if that would be confusing.
So it might just be simpler, even if a little more cumbersome, to just say
the executive director. Exactly.
So let me try to answer some of the questions as best as I can. So in terms of days, is when we switch from calendar days to business days, I don't know of any standard, like something would be the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure when you switch over.
Right.
But calendar days and business days are both defined, or day, which the default understanding of day is that it's just a calendar day, is in the definitions. And business day is also defined in the definitions. So
it's not a big deal. It's clear enough you can count them because you're told what they are. It just seemed odd within the same provision to have 10 business days and 14 regular days.
Clearly understand, but I guess it's more of obviously that's a policy call for the commission.
Mm-hmm.
The charter does establish these deadlines, however.
Oh.
And I'm not sure if that was made clear earlier. I don't know if that came up in a prior discussion. No?
About the 10 days and the 14 days, those are
from the charter.
Those are actually from the charter, the important section of the charter.
I withdraw.
And why one is 10 and one is 14?
Right.
I'm not really sure.
I defer to the charter. It's at least there's an answer if somebody says, why did you write it that way?
I mean, the language in this section of the regs does follow the charter very closely. Mm-hmm. And here I'm talking about an in section that sets forth some of the basic guidelines for investigations by the Ethics Commission.
Right.
I think you had a second question as well about when the 14-day trigger begins.
It was in the second line. If it's correct, within 14 days, the executive director shall. If that's what we intend, I think it would help to take the comma out so that you're clear which phrase it goes with.
What about something like within 14 days of receiving such notification from the CA or DA? Well,
take out the comma.
I think the comma makes it clear.
Okay.
Or you say the executive director within 14 days of such notification, comma, neither the district attorney or city attorney, or leave out the second comma.
No, I think that's exactly the ambiguity that you're thinking that it goes before. That the DA and the city attorney have 14 days.
No.
And they don't.
Within 14 days of such notification, the district attorney nor the city attorney intends to pursue an investigation, the executive director shall inform the complainant in writing of the action, if any, blah, 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 blah.
I think that's what you're saying.
This is the process, as I understand
it. Yes. If you want to say it in English.
So the commission receives a complaint.
Yes.
Forwards a complaint both to the district attorney and city attorney. Both the district attorney and the city attorney have 10 days to review that complaint, determine whether they want to take it up themselves.
Right.
Or otherwise notify the ethics commission that they're not.
Right.
Send something back to the commission. The commission has an additional 14 days after receiving that communication from either the DA or CA.
Right.
To tell the complainant what's going on.
Exactly.
So apparently it is a little confusing.
That's how this is.
Yeah,
precisely.
Clearly it's confusing.
It's got a phrase that could go either with the first half of the sentence or the second. If it can trick Commissioner Ward, no one is safe.
Exactly.
can't we just say within 14 days of notification that neither the DA nor the CA intends to pursue an investigation, the executive director shall inform?
No.
How?
I'm sorry to belabor this. How about if neither the district attorney nor city attorney intends to pursue an investigation, the executive director shall, within 14 days,
of such notification.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That I had an arrow to that spot or the elimination of the comma. Either one will put it in the right place. But it is two different stages and steps. Do folks think that that choice is clearer, moving the phrase after the shall? Okay. So we've had a motion to accept the paragraph. Would the maker like to amend it to include that change?
I'll accept that. Can I just consider it a friendly amendment and accept it?
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And I'll accept it as a second.
If I'd written it myself in the second sentence, I wouldn't have written as provided above. I would have said as provided in the previous sentence, because I'm not sure how far above I'm supposed to go when I get something like that. But I will leave it to the movement to accept it or leave it as written.
Just for the record, it may be helpful to just clarify the edit just one more time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Take the phrase, within 14 days of such notification, and move it so it falls between shall and inform. With two commas.
Between shall and inform.
Got it.
Okay, we have a motion made, seconded, and amended.
Do you want to add your third piece to the motion?
It's up to the movement whether she...
I'm sorry, I totally missed that.
What? At the end of that paragraph, it says, and shall subsequently receive notification as provided above. And I was looking around for where the above was when I realized it was in the immediately preceding sentence. So I might just say, and shall subsequently receive notification as provided in the previous sentence.
The sentence that we just tinkered with?
Right, because it says because what you're trying to preserve is, if that happens, you have to give the person the reasons and so forth. That one's very...
I think it's fine.
Okay. We have a motion made and seconded. Mr. Kilpel.
Three things now. I'm sorry, this has become sort of complicated. I think the 10 business days and 14 calendar days really gets you to the same place, so I'm not sure why it's formulated that way. If that's what the charter reads, then I suppose we should track that as best as possible, but it is a little odd, I agree. Second point, I think I understood the process the way it was laid out, but I'm not sure that I agree with that completely. If there's a complaint that is forwarded to the city attorney and district attorney, they have 10 business days to inform the commission whether or not they're going to initiate or pursue. I think that there are two possibilities from that. As soon as you hear from both the city attorney and the district attorney that they're not going to pursue, or 10 business days has elapsed in the event that you don't hear from one or the other in response, even though they're required to, then I think there's a new trigger for 14 calendar days under which the executive director shall inform the complainant. So I think it's the earlier of 10 business days following notification or their notification from both entities that they will not pursue.
If it came earlier, that's a good point.
Unless maybe I should go to law school, but I'm just, okay. And then my third point is, although this sentence starts out, or this section starts out by saying the ED shall inform in writing, then it says if the ED has not done so. That seems a bit incongruous. If you're supposed to inform within 14 days, then why provide a separate opportunity to say, well, we didn't do that, and here's why, and so now we're going to do it. That seems odd. If you need to notify within 14 days, then you need to notify within 14 days. And I'm sorry, my fourth point out of three, it's not clear what the language means, what actions he or she will take on the complaint. Does that mean just to say we will carry this forward to a thing, or does this mean we're going to go after this person? It's a little vague as to what is encompassed within the scope of indicating what action he or she has taken or plans to take on the complaint at this point within the procedures. I'm sorry for the four complicated points out of three.
There's a motion made and revised on the table. Mr. Pilpel has made some additional comments. Do you? Mr. Pilpel. Did I say that? Mr. Pilpel. I broke the rule about no food in the hearing room, and I'm paying for it. Does any of that incline you to alter the motion?
Do you really think it's necessary to change the this trigger piece? I'm happy to talk it through. I wasn't inclined to change my motion, but if someone feels strongly,
I don't think so, because it says the district attorney and the city attorney. So even if you hear from the district attorney after 6 days, you're still waiting for the 10th day to hear from the other one. And then that's the trigger.
Right. I'm inclined to leave my motion as
it is. I agree with you. I think the trigger works, because you know that they do not, that each one does not intend to pursue, either when they tell you or when the 14 days has run. Or the 10 days.
When the 10 days has run. Yeah.
There were points related to the second sentence, which does include within it a sort of within 14 days, except if you say that you're not ready to do that.
Can I say, Chairperson, that I felt like there was some reason to take a look at that second sentence based on what Mr. Pilpel said. I think it's a good point that if we're saying that the executive director shall, then there should not be a reason to come back and say, well, if the executive director does not do it, if we're saying he shall. Seems to me we could take out that sentence, that second sentence.
Might I just suggest that we look to the charter language and see what we must include and how much discretion we have to futz with it? That might help. Or not.
So if I understand Mr. Povell's concern with the second sentence, it's more about a lack of definition or clarity as to what the commission has to say in its notification of the complainant?
No. The first sentence says the director shall do something. Mm-hmm. And then the second says, but if they don't, then they should do something else.
Sometimes people don't do anything that they should the first time around.
But why do we need to acknowledge
but
that?
Why can't
I mean,
the first
it does come very close to the charter language. And do you want to?
Including the second sentence? Yeah, it would be, I think that's a good suggestion. What does the charter say?
Okay. So from the charter, the equivalent sentence, I believe, says, if no decision has been made within 14 days, the person who made the complaint shall be notified of the reasons for the delay and shall subsequently receive notification as provided above. So it's pretty close. And I think the idea is, look, sometimes the commission may take longer than 14 days to decide what they're going to do next. And if so, at least let them know in 14 days that they need more time to mull over it.
Given that, could you read the charter's equivalent of the previous sentence?
Sure.
Does it have shall inform, or does it say something like ordinarily?
It does say shall. So it says, within 14 days after receiving notification that neither the DA nor CA intends to pursue an investigation, The commission shall notify in writing the person who made the complaint of the action, if any, the commission has taken or plans to take on the complaint, together with the reasons for such action or non-action.
And then goes on to say, has not made a decision, then it tells you it hasn't.
Then
and
it
why
says
not? And
okay. why we're taking more time, I assume, to decide the next steps.
So it pretty much tracks the charter.
I'd like to call a question, please.
Yes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. That was D, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're moving to the next decision point in the memo, which is, however, decision point 15.
I call that one out as a drafting error, if you recall at the last meeting, but the city attorney has informed me that we can't treat sunshine complaints from the task force differently than sunshine complaints filed directly with the Ethics Commission. So my language would put a different process there, so we need to make it the same. So if we're gonna treat sunshine complaints differently than other complaints, we have to treat all sunshine complaints differently than other complaints, not just the ones that come from the task force. Would be my druthers to treat the ones from the task force only differently, but that creates problems.
So what you're saying to us now is that on further reconsideration, staff believes that all complaints alleging a violation, what you're saying now is that was also driven by guidance that we should not treat them separately, not just
right.
a policy matter, but as a matter of
right.
law.
Because we're changing a policy about sunshine complaints because in looking through the charter, we've decided that the language allows that, but just because of the sunshine ordinance, and it only addresses sunshine complaints. Other complaints are going to be treated as I always have.
Okay, so I have a question. Yeah. So if we're treating sunshine complaints filed by individuals or are not referred to us by the task force in this open manner,
mm-hmm.
It's open from beginning to end, from the complaint to the investigation to, I mean, what's
open? What we're
open?
Doing is, after a decision has been made
mm-hmm.
on a sunshine complaint, then we will make the notes and information public
mm-hmm.
after the fact. It's not going to be an open investigation. If we go to probable cause hearing, the probable cause hearing for a sunshine complaint will be open rather than closed session.
So the fact that a complaint was made, is that open or not open?
No, it's not.
Okay.
Sunshine referrals are open by virtue of the fact that they were held in public at the Sunshine Task Force, and they make a public referral to us.
If this is, I have a question. If this question is beyond the scope of the notice or inappropriate at this time, I would just appreciate the explanation. The text reads, except for hearings regarding alleged willful violations, are there violations of the sunshine ordinance that are not willful?
Yeah, there's one of the open questions
right.
of contention between us and sunshine has been that the city attorney's opinion is that they should only be referring to ethics questions of willful violations, and the sunshine ordinance task force feels otherwise. One of our proposals to them on the list is to state once and for all, yes, it is, or no, it isn't.
Okay, so what this is saying is there are possible violations of the ordinance
mm-hmm.
that are not willful.
Right.
The only ones that we have jurisdiction over are those that are willful.
That they
so
deem
it
to be
is,
willful, right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yes.
Executive Director St. Croix, maybe if you could just repeat what you said about the charter that allows us to treat sunshine complaints differently, it might help. I'm not understanding, I don't understand how the charter allows us to do that, number one. And number two, my understanding was the reason we could treat Sunshine complaints differently is not because we had the authority to do so across the board, but it was because they had gone through the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force process. These would be complaints that wouldn't have gone through any process and then are forwarded us, and I thought that that was the argument of the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force Committee when we met with them, that they had already gone through this process, there was no reason for us to go through it again, so it was a way of basically asking us to short-circuit our usual process and honor the process that had already taken place. But this would be just dealing with Sunshine complaints completely different than any other complaint.
Okay.
Correct?
Yeah, I'm a little hesitant to go into too much detail in open session about this, but let me just say the interpretation of the charter on this issue about what is subject to the normal confidentiality protections that apply to ethics complaints and how that interacts with the Sunshine Ordinance is more of a subject matter determination. It's not, that interpretation is not based on whether it's gone through the task force or not, but whether it's a Sunshine complaint or not, in that the confidentiality restrictions in the charter do not necessarily include Sunshine complaints or Sunshine matters or public records matters. I guess the other point you were getting into, I think, about sort of the short-circuiting and sort of how will Ethics Commission take up Sunshine, I think is, although I missed the last meeting, so I kind of missed this discussion, is more about sort of the level of inquiry that the Ethics Commission has once the task force has examined and held its hearings and so on and so forth. I hope that helps.
So
the interpretation doesn't really turn on whether it's gone through the task force or not. It's really, is it a Sunshine matter or not?
Mm-hmm.
Hence the need to slightly revisit this issue and clarifying this applies to all Sunshine complaints, not just those that have been processed by the task force.
Just a different approach than we've taken in the past and different than the discussion we had with the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, which, at least at the committee level, as I understand it, they still remain concerned about how we're dealing with complaints, including how open the process is, whether it's willful or across the board. So I made the point last meeting that I thought we shouldn't actually take this up until we had more input from Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, because I have a feeling they're not going to agree with either this approach or the approach last time.
Okay, yeah, and I also wasn't at the joint meeting, so I guess I'm a little bit of a deficit of information here, but I guess I would assume they'd be happy if we were moving towards a more open structure, but I could be wrong. And I think that, you know, certainly the dialogue will continue, but, you know, obviously things being what they were, I mean, we did take another look at the issue. Executive Director St. Croix wanted us to take another look at the issue, and, you know, we're comfortable with where it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
And this mm-hmm. may not be all they want, but they're going to get more than they got before. You know, and that's undeniable.
Right. And what this provides is open treatment, regardless of the process by which it comes to us. We still have said that we will be talking with them about the whole remaining complex of issues that we've wanted to talk about. Is there a motion to approve decision point 15, or do the commissioners have other questions?
So moved.
Second.
Public comment?
Yeah, I take some issue with this. The way I'm reading it now, if this language were approved, if I, as a member of the public, were to file a complaint with the commission alleging a violation of the ordinance, but not a willful violation, then that hearing would be closed to the public to the extent permitted by law, unless the respondent asked for the probable cause hearing to be in public. But any allegations of willful violation or complaints filed directly, any referrals, would be held in open session. I still maintain, and I'm interested in the previous discussion about how referrals from the task force to the commission, which are treated under the Sunshine Ordinance under Admin Code 67.33, 34, 35, whatever, how that interacts with the charter provisions about handling of complaints generally. It seems to me that a referral from the task force, I've said this before, referral from the task force is not the same as a complaint. You may choose to treat it as the same as a complaint, I think, or not. I think there's some discretion, and I'm not sure how much latitude there is in the charter for how that's treated. But this latest discussion suggests that it's going to be handled the same for purpose of a complaint, but it's not going to be treated the same for purpose of a probable cause hearing. And that seems odd to me. It seems to me that it's either confidential by operation of the charter because it's a complaint or being treated as a complaint and handled as a complaint, or it's not confidential and then you set up your own process that may or may not fall within these regs. So I would agree with Commissioner Hansen to the extent that this whole issue of how sunshine complaints and referrals from the task force are handled perhaps ought to be put off until there's a further meeting of the minds with the task force, at which point the commission and the task force will still probably not agree, but at least there could be some more clarity from each side about powers and duties imposed by both the charter and the various codes. I'm also starting to understand that there's a difference between that the commission enforces or regulates, as in the CNG code, and to the extent that the Sunshine Ordinance is in the admin code and perhaps elsewhere, that there may be a distinction drawn in terms of jurisdiction. But maybe I'm reading more into what Andrew just said. Maybe not.
Did you want to speak to any part of that?
I disagree. It's all of our investigations are confidential while they're ongoing. The Sunshine complaints, after they are settled, whether it's dismissal or prosecution or whatever, will then be made, the notes will then be made public. In the case of a probable cause hearing regarding a Sunshine complaint, the probable cause hearing will be public. But while we're investigating a Sunshine complaint, we will not discuss it. The way we do with other complaints, we will treat them the same.
And if I might, I think I understand that. I'm just suggesting that if I wanted to file a complaint with the commission relative to a violation of the Sunshine Ordinance, I might not want that hearing to be public in the same manner as a complainant alleging any other type of violation of a law within your jurisdiction would not have an open probable cause hearing, nor would the respondent. And that's why the distinction was drawn last month between referrals from the task force, which are already to some extent a public matter, and any complaint that's filed directly with the commission to the extent that it's within your jurisdiction as you so determine.
If I could just ask some follow-up question.
Mm-hmm, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so I wasn't here for the last discussion, so could you... So you're concerned about people who make complaints of violation of the Sunshine Ordinance and want the probable cause hearing to be closed?
Or would otherwise not be entitled to an open... That complaint would not otherwise be entitled to an open hearing, but would be treated with the same confidentiality as any other type of complaint. I think what I was trying to say is there... One could draw a distinction between a referral from the task force to the extent that you're going to treat it as a complaint because it's already a public matter versus a complaint that's filed directly with the commission, which isn't already a public matter.
I see what you're saying. So you're saying that something that's gone through the task force process has already been publicly aired, necessarily.
Right.
So
and
the same concerns don't come into play where something
right. There may be other concerns, but
right.
at least...
No, I think that's completely fair from a... Is that okay? I think that's completely fair from a policy perspective. Again, I mean, not to go into it, but the interpretation is really driven by the subject matter here about what kind of potential or alleged violation of law has occurred, not whether it's been processed by the task force. It's sort of how broadly does the confidential... again, I'm a little hesitant to go into the detail. How broadly does the confidentiality protections provided by the Charter regarding ethics investigations, how far does that reach?
And that's an interesting discussion. I didn't know we were going there necessarily, but if someone's going to allege that there was a loan in excess of $15,000 to a campaign versus someone not providing records within 10 or 14 days, if one is entitled to a level of confidentiality for whatever reason, it's not clear why the other wouldn't necessarily because of the subject matter question.
Well, I think that's the choice or possibly dilemma. We're seeking a consistency. The question is whether it's consistency with the subject matter of all sunshine-based complaints must be treated the same when dealt with by the commission, or procedurally the same on their merits, or should it be treated the same way all other commission work is treated, starting out being with the assumption of confidential unless. And I guess what we don't know is whether that's a policy choice that we're allowed to make or legally compelled, which is what I thought we were being told in the first place, that if it's sunshine, it must be open.
Right. That's why I made the motion, because I thought what we were supposed to do.
That's right.
But did we not, I mean, should we, do we need another memo on this?
That's what
I think. I think that's absolutely fair, and I guess where Mr. Pilipal and I disagree is that I think he's taking a very, very reasonable policy perspective on the issue. If we were to clean the blackboard and start from scratch, certainly not an unreasonable place to start at all on these matters. And I guess what I'm saying, and probably what you've already heard from John Givner, is that unfortunately we can't start from scratch. We are where we are. And there are certain things that are compelled and we're required to do, subject to the charter, public records law, et cetera, et cetera.
Let me ask if this is correct. If we were to adopt the motion tonight, but then go back and say there is a better policy, that is what current law compels, but we would like to move toward a different solution, is that a pathway that we could take? Because Commissioner Gusukuma and I have the same question. Should we act on it tonight in light of current law and then think about whether this puts us where we want to be, or should we keep the question open and get and consult further with you on what should be done? So I don't know whether there's a... I'm sensing that it would be preferable to act on this tonight, given what the city attorney's office has told us. But in light of this good conversation we'd said before about the other ones, that we could always, as we talk to Sunshine Task Force and the city attorney's office and so forth, could evolve if we saw a wiser set of alternatives down the road, but that we should conform them now to current law.
Right. Yeah. And as from a policy perspective, I don't want to make this change. I agree with Mr. Popel on that level. But the city attorney is telling me we have no choice. So in order to conform with the laws that be, you need to, I can't tell you you must do this, but
it
the city attorney is saying...
It is why you brought up this recommendation.
Yeah, and just to echo that, I mean, this is what I would recommend that you act on this tonight. Unfortunately, this will probably won't be the last time we discuss the issue. And certainly, laws can change, and the Ethics Commission plays a role in that process.
And I would have no objection to you taking action with or without Commissioner Hansen's support on this, with the understanding that the other 4 points from last month's memo with respect to the task force are going to get discussed by them, and this stuff isn't going away. So this was a good conversation. Good work.
There's a motion made and seconded on the floor. We've received public comment, and are the commissioners ready to vote on the motion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Can I just say I voted aye because I know that we need 4 votes on this. I'm not very comfortable, although I understand what we're trying to conform to what we understand now is current law, so I voted aye to give you the 4th vote. However, I do want to reiterate what was just said, which is that I think there may be a better way to do this, and I don't want to see this as closing the door on the topic. I also am remain concerned that we're not including more input from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force on this, and I'm concerned that now that once we've approved these amendments go forward through the policy bodies, that we won't roll back around to have a discussion with the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. So I'd make that request that we engage them.
And I can promise that Mr. St. Croix and I will talk about reaching out to them and making sure they understand that we need to pick up all of the points from that memo, including me, and why we took action now. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Would this be a good time for a break? Are people here for one, or would you like to plow forward? Okay. Plowing. Okay. We now have the technical and cleanup proposal. Unless you tell me that we need to discuss each one separately, decision point 16 takes them as a group. Am I reading that right? So it's flagging the ones that were made in the narrow conforming activity and asking us to make a decision on just 3A2 on page 3. So if we move to the decision point, you're saying you're okay with the conforming technical ones that were part of the same package, right? So if that's incorrect and you want to discuss what a city law is or a respondent, now's your chance. Otherwise, we'll move forward to decision point 16. The section it refers to is on page 3. Is that one of us, Ms. Bieden? Okay. Anyone? Section 3A2. Formal complaints may be filed anonymously.
To approve.
Second.
Any discussion by commissioners? Public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Decision point 17.
Move to approve.
Second.
Public comment? Did you want to say?
You could, if there's no discussion on these, you can do them in block if you want to save time.
I thought they were clustered. Okay. Well, let's act on 17 since there's a motion on the floor. There was no public comment on it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. We'll gamble on 18 through 25. Any discussion?
I have a question on decision point 25, which I take to mean would be approving everything, basically, that we're doing that we haven't addressed in individual decision points. I have a question about some language that's not in a decision point. So I was waiting to raise it till the end. I don't know if voting...
Why don't you raise it with us and we'll...
Figure out what to do with it?
Yeah.
Okay. It's 3D on page 4.
Wait, is it a technical amendment or is it not mentioned at all in the memo?
Not mentioned at all in the memo. So it may mean...
How about if we take decision points 18 through 24?
Oh, that's what I was going to suggest. Okay.
Okay. Do I hear a motion?
I move that we approve decision points 18 through 24.
Second.
Public comment?
I'm not sure if it's on point for this. I may be more with Commissioner Hansen on just a general question, if I might, at this point. Just to... it may fit into one of these.
Okay.
Should I just try it?
Sure.
Although there's reference, including on page 5 of the language, not the memo, to the ED providing a monthly summary to the commission for dismissed complaints, and I understand that to be a confidential document. If there's some way, either through the annual report or some periodic reporting, that the commission could explain without revealing confidential details about complaints, to say over a period of time you've received complaints alleging loans in excess of the loan limit with respect to campaigns, improper governmental activities in four departments, something that's very high level but goes more than just categorizing the complaints. I think we've had extended conversations over many years with various commissioners over how much information can be made public, and I would still maintain that there are ways to reveal more of the activities without revealing the substance, and that that would continue to help in the commission's enforcement area. And I don't know where that would be placed in here. I certainly don't want to violate any confidentiality, but I do think that the, you know, just sort of box scores, we've got 34 complaints pending, we, you know, dismissed 27 last year, whatever it was, that there may be other information that could be shared without revealing anything specific or confidential. And if there's a way to do that, I think that would be good.
Let me just tell you my reaction to that.
Okay.
Just a quick question. Is that the piece you wanted to, it's a separate section.
Okay.
It seems to me that that's a desirable and possibly useful piece of information to include in our annual report. But when I look at the title of this document, Regulations for Investigations and Enforcement Proceedings, it seems that that requirement doesn't really fit here, that this isn't the place to tell our executive director that we would like that. We would like to be informed about those patterns and developments about those kinds of complaints. It just seems a different kind of matter than what is contained here, whereas these monthly summaries are a required part of the investigative process, which would let us double back specifically and say, we're not happy with that dismissal.
Well, just as, and I would say back, just as there's a monthly summary report, there could be a requirement for an annual summary report to be made public that does not, that discloses blah, but doesn't disclose blah, and that shall be incorporated into the annual report.
What's your reaction?
This is not something you need to do tonight, but this is just, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's, thank you for the suggestion.
Okay.
We have on the floor a motion to adopt 18 through 24.
I just had one question about decision point 20. So I was looking at page 14, and it talks about an immediate notification by the executive director to the respondent, I guess, if the executive director is not going to proceed with a specific charge or allegation.
Could you just tell us where on the page you are?
Yeah, so it's on page 14. I think this is 11D, if I'm in the right place. It's decision point 20. So it's the third sentence talking about the specific charge or allegation. And if the, you know, then it goes on to the fourth and fifth line. So my only concern is this allegation piece. I wasn't sure. Now, it seems very narrow. So if you're not going to pursue a particular allegation, like a factual allegation, that you're not going to try to prove that, for example, that it would then burden the executive director with having to notify the respondent about each and every little piece of the accusation that he or she will not be, quote, pursuing. I can understand with a charge and an accusation, right? So a particular code section that you're not going to be, hey, it looks like we don't have the evidence for this. We're not going to charge you on that particular, or we're not going to pursue this particular count. That makes sense to me. And you want to let them know because you don't want them to spend time, unnecessary time, defending that charge and trying to gather evidence and so on. But I guess my question was, what does it mean, this phrase here, allegation? And I don't, again, I mean, I don't want the respondent to then come back saying, hey, Mr. or Ms. Executive Director, you didn't tell me that you weren't going to be trying to prove this one factual allegation, therefore, let's throw it out, or that sort of thing. So that was my concern. So can someone speak to that issue, please?
No, I mean, I certainly understand the point that you want to make. I guess you're leaning towards deleting allegation and just leaving it at charge in that first sentence. It certainly makes sense to me.
Right.
I don't know if the executive director has any operational preference or Richard does.
I don't know. This is existing language, so I'm not sure why.
Right. Is it our existing language or is it driven by some other?
Our existing language.
So this isn't charter based.
I don't believe so. I think it's just something that's in the current version of the regulations.
Yeah, so I wouldn't have any objection if you wanted to amend the motion to remove the words or allegation.
Is there further discussion? Because I'm inclined to do that, but if there's a concern, I'm happy to
It actually conforms it better with the sentence that comes after it. It seems reasonable to me. That it speaks on the level of charge or violation and not a single factual allegation. You might have four allegations to support a charge and one falls out. Do you want to change amend your motion?
I'd like to amend my own motion to approve decision points 18 through 24, but amending decision point 20, the language on page 14, section 11D, on that third line to eliminate or charge, which follows, I mean, or allegation, excuse me, which follows specific charge. Does that make sense?
Who was the seconder?
I was.
Are you comfortable with that?
I'll accept that, yeah.
Okay. We've had public comment on 17 through 24. Do you want to speak to this particular change?
Yes. I think that makes sense, although it got me back to page 10 and section 8D, amending the probable cause determination. Am I understanding correctly that when a complaint is initially filed way back at the beginning, someone makes an allegation, party X did something wrong, and that's termed an allegation. Once there's a preliminary investigation, whatever it's called, preliminary review, and a probable cause hearing, then at some point it's converted from an allegation to a charge, and there's a charging document, or there's something that's treated as a charging document. I just want to understand where you get, not that it's a bad thing, but so that it's very clear where something is converted from an allegation to a charge, and then you're actually dealing with the hearing on the merits with respect to specific charges that may then be added or deleted, but it's not just a mere allegation. Am I making any sense? Am I?
If do you mind if I jump in?
No, go ahead. I was looking for it.
Yeah, so I think in a, and I apologize in advance if I misconstrued your edit, but I think the understanding is that an allegation can be a specific factual assertion or a factual point mm-hmm. underlying a charge, which is something like a cause of action or a legal claim. So a very simple charge would be failure to disclose something on a Form 700, say. And the factual allegation would be this person forgot to report a loan in the 2006 Form 700 or something like that. So I think that's the distinction that Commissioner Visakuma is going after, that slight modification to it, just a factual, an underlying fact.
I think the answer to the question that you're asking takes us back to page 7, 7A, describing a probable cause report. What you were looking at on 14 was if in the course of preparing for the hearing the executive director or staff realized that they were incomplete or perhaps overbroad in the what you were calling the charging document, that the probable cause report is that document. Am I correct? So the statement of what the charges are it's contained in the probable cause report.
Right. I mean, it wouldn't need to be within the probable cause report, but I guess it depends on what stage you're at. I mean, once you get a hearing of the merits, the charging document is the accusation. I mean, the accusation would lay out the universe of claims that you're proceeding on at the hearing of the merits.
And so I think you're looking for, so where does it describe the accusation?
It says in the on page.
Page 10 at the bottom, I think.
On page at the bottom, it says the accusation shall be the charging document. The last line.
Jacques Hughes, so to speak.
So does.
Yeah, I think because you've got that new line in the bottom of 10, shall list only those charges for with da-da-da-da-da, then I think it makes sense to delete allegation later on page 14, because then allegations have fallen away, essentially. You're only at charges that were sustained at the probable cause point. Is that not accurate?
Correct, Commissioner. That's not true, but that's not really germane to the change that I wanted to make, and I'd like to call the question.
Well, I'm just suggesting whether now or in the future that you'd be clear at what point it's an allegation, so someone, not me, but somebody else who's actually suffering this process can figure out what they're subject to and what not at any given point. I mean, this really is the roadmap that people need to use, so as much clarity as you can contain here, I think that would be best. And so I think it's fine to use allegations early on, but later on, if you're getting to a very formal process with specific charges, I think you need to move from one to the other at a point in the document, and that's not entirely clear.
I think we can look at that, but I think the motion is based on the idea that it speaks about charges on page 10 and then is consistent later with.
No, I'm with the motion. I just think that there are some other edits that might follow from it. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And can I ask, I know the question's been called as the seconder. I thought I understood the change, and I'm still supportive of it. I want to make sure that the use of allegations or charges is the appropriate phrase on page 10 under D, amending probable cause determination. Are we okay to still leaving it there? I think we are, but I just need to clarify.
D, the underlying sentence.
Sorry.
It says the accusation shall list only those charges.
No, sorry. It's actually 8D. Page 10, middle of the page, under amending probable cause determination, 4 lines down. Add or amend allegations or charges against the respondent.
That's right.
And then following on 9, we start talking about charge. We describe what charging is. So I think we're okay on the floor. Yes.
I think we're ready to call the question. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Thank you. Okay, 25. Commissioner Hansen, you had a point that you wanted to make under this umbrella adopt decision point related to all of the rest. Page 4, was it?
Yes, and again, it doesn't come up in the document at all. So it's on page 4, and it is... it's 4D, complaints made at public meetings. I would like to propose a change in the second sentence. We say the commission shall urge the public in the strongest terms possible not to make complaints at public meetings. And I would just like to slightly revise that to say the commission shall urge the public in the strongest terms possible not to make complaints at public meetings and shall explain the process of filing complaints. So it's not just left at, we tell the public they can't make complaints, but we tell them how, what our process is to make complaints, so we direct them to do it appropriately. I'm going to repeat that.
The additional language would be, and shall explain the process for...
But for filing complaints. It wasn't calendared, this language wasn't included. I don't know if we can address that, but I'm not comfortable just leaving D as it is. 3D.
I think it's fairly within the scope of the notice, okay, if you like the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Commissioners?
I'll second that. Oh, did you make a motion?
I didn't, but I will. I'll make a motion that we revise the language.
Can you point out to me where it is?
Page 4 of the amendments, middle of the page, complaints made at public meetings.
It's not a regulation, but...
Well, there's a process for making...
Ryan,
any person or entity may file a formal complaint alleging violation. Formal complaints must be made in writing on a form specifically provided by the commission staff. So the commission shall not receive complaints at public meetings. Does that mean that the commission would not receive a document from someone who is wanting to file a complaint?
because that's how a complaint is made. So does that mean we wouldn't accept a document at a public meeting? Or is this talking about someone standing at the podium and exercising their right of free speech?
We've always just people stand up and talk about things and say, I want to file a complaint. We would never tell them you can't talk about what you want to talk about, but we wouldn't accept an oral formal complaint at a commission meeting. If they came in here with the forms filled out and handed it to us.
Well, that's how a complaint is made.
Yeah, we would take it.
Don't we have a problem
but
here that...
We won't let someone stand at the podium, discuss a complaint, and then say, we've received
and
your...
And then expect it to trigger the process. But don't we... Isn't our problem here that we've got... Complaints means two things. One is a person complaining about something, which is okay. And another is a formal capital C complaint, written complaint that carries certain expectations.
But this to me, if I was the public, I'd be reading this to say you can't come here and complain.
Right. Right, and that's what I'm saying.
Because earlier
should we just say formal complaint?
How a
no
complaint allowed. Is made.
Now that would be.
So but this doesn't.
Clearly not
this doesn't,
it's for tonight.
Can I revise my proposal? I would suggest that we say the commission shall not receive formal, oral, or verbal. Complaints at public meetings. The commission shall urge the public in the strongest terms possible, although I don't think we necessarily need that, but the commission shall urge the public not to file complaints at public meetings and shall explain the process for filing complaints.
If they filled out the paperwork, then they would accept it, right?
Say it again, I'm sorry.
If they filled out the paperwork and brought it, they'd accept it.
Oh.
If I'm going to do anything with this, I delete it.
What if it's right? Or what if it's
fine?
I mean, it is. I think deleting it is a perfectly fine option. If we wanted to say something and we thought it was helpful at this spot, we could say, I had some language. Simply saying, oral complaints do not constitute.
Yeah.
Or oral complaints made at a commission
yeah.
meeting
yeah.
do not constitute formal complaints.
Yeah.
Formal complaints
yeah.
should be made that
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to give us language?
Shall I try again? if you... No, go ahead.
Something you like. No, if you have something you...
I don't.
What did I say? Oral complaints do not... Oral comments do not constitute... Formal complaints,
yeah,
oral comments
made
at
public meeting.
Oral comments, oral or verbal, made at.
Excuse me, Commissioner.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah,
let me just make one comment. I
yeah.
apologize
yeah.
for needing to
no,
make it.
Okay.
I mean, formal complaints are already defined as only complaints made in writing,
mm-hmm.
so it's a little bit perhaps
yeah.
redundant
yes.
to
mm-hmm.
say that oral complaints
yeah, right.
okay.
are formal, be they at a commission meeting or not.
Would you
delete
like to suggest
it?
We delete the
yes.
Yes.
Could we just delete it?
I hear a motion.
A motion.
Do I hear a second,
second.
Or two or three? Mr. Pilpel?
I was thinking either public comment made at public meetings shall not be treated as complaints. The commission shall direct complainants to the appropriate process. That may not be the best solution. A better approach may just be the little brochure that you've got on the desk at the office that has, like, the generics about the commission, to just have that here, and if someone says, well, what's going on here, blah, 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 I want to make a complaint, take the brochure, go see us at the office. And as to taking papers at a commission meeting, upon reflection, I'm not sure that's a good idea, because I think it's good to have everything date-stamped and clocked into the office, so you don't say, well, you know, St. Croix took that stuff on the fly. And I think it's best to have... especially since this can get really cumbersome, you want all this stuff to come in through the formal channels. So I would argue against taking stuff at a meeting. I have one other quick comment on 25, separate from this point. Should I do it now or do you want to hold?
Go ahead.
Okay. I was looking at the end on page 22, 23 with respect to stipulated orders. There's no sentence in here, and I would encourage you to just add a simple sentence that says, a stipulated order is a public document. That would track with the bottom of page 10, where the accusation is a public document, just so that there's no ambiguity. The stipulated order is a public document. I don't think there's any ambiguity now, but it's just not anywhere in here. And I would suggest putting that...
At the top of 23?
At the 23, at the end of D. Yes, exactly.
Stipulated orders must be announced publicly is different from what you're describing? I'm just not...
You're just saying there was a stipulated... You announced at a commission meeting there was a stipulated order that was entered into between blah, 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 $15,000, have a nice day. But... I think just adding those sentences at the end after the full course of an order of commission to say a stipulated order shall be a public document or is a public document.
But there's no document exists.
But it will exist.
Write it down.
Not the announcement isn't a public document, but the stipulated order itself is a public document.
Yeah.
And I just want to make that clear.
Does it matter? As a matter of practice, any time the commission approves a stipulated agreement or settlement order, settlement agreement, that agreement stipulation is put on our website. So,
right. So it's just articulating it. It's not a change in practice. It's just making it clear here.
Correct. I'm trying to have that track with the bottom of page 10.
If in the second sentence it said the stipulated order shall be a public document and have the full force of an order of the commission. Is that they're concerned about that?
But isn't that the law? That once we've entered into an order or stipulated order, it isn't a public document? Is that not the law? Are we just choosing to disclose them because we're being nice? I don't want to include things like that in here so where we don't say it in something that's supposed to be public and we didn't say it. You know what I mean? I don't want to create confusion. So my understanding was that these stipulated orders are public documents. If I'm wrong, that's fine. And if we're making them public because we want to, that's okay. But we should all be clear about that.
Again, I point out,
as far as I know, and I hate to open this door, but I guess I got to look into it further. As far as I know, I mean, we've just treated them as public documents. I don't know of anything that compels that.
Mr. Kilpel, can you tell us where you see the inconsistency or the need for doing that?
Sure. Bottom of page 10, section 9A, last sentence. Create the accusation. Accusation is an important thing. Blah, blah, blah. Sent to whoever. The accusation is a public document, period. Make very clear, black and white, it's public. Just as that starts a public process, if you will, I think a stipulated order, to the extent that it concludes a public process, whether you have discretion or not, if you've chosen to make it, if it is public, I think just having a statement that says a stipulated order is a public document just makes it very clear that if and when there is one, it is. That's all. It's not a change in practice.
But, Commissioner Gusakuma, do you see a difference between the two, or would you?
If I had to guess, I'm going to throw in my lot with DCA Shen here. If I had to guess, I would guess that we have discretion with an accusation and maybe we don't with the stipulated order. There's something about the resolution of something when we vote it and it's finally over that we have to announce things in public and those things are public documents. I mean, you know, and you see it with the school board, you see it with, you know, with all sort of governmental sort of bodies. And again, I don't have a problem with it being a public document.
Right.
I just don't want to start saying these things in some places and then not in others. And
very fair point.
That's my
Since it was not here and there's a question and a question's been raised about whether it is already the law and the requirement that it is public and that it may be different than the parallel that you're describing to the accusation, would the commissioners be comfortable if we simply ask the city attorney to look into that and see if it has the effect that Commissioner Kusakuma is asking about, whether it is already automatically public based on some other source, such that we can, not within the regulations act as though we're choosing it to be, but have an answer that says it is offline. In short, not do anything about this today, since we don't have the answer to Commissioner Gusakuma's question, but take your point and look into it. Is that what the commissioners would like to do? Then we're going to come back to Commissioner Hansen's question. But this was an additional point that you were making.
I have no objection to this.
Wait a minute.
No,
a stipulated order is something issued by the commission at the end of a hearing?
Right.
At any time.
Which we believe.
So do we issue it in? Do we issue it in closed session?
We may agree to it, I think, in closed session. But once, you know how we sometimes when we come back after closed session, and then sometimes you hear Director Sinclair, he hasn't done it in a while, but then he like reads very, very quickly case number so and so, blah blah blah. There was a whatever a finding against blah blah.
We make it public.
Fine. Yeah. So. It has to be announced publicly.
We make it public. Yeah. It's a public document.
Yeah, and then the document.
You don't have to say every single thing that's obvious.
And that's what I'm saying, that we don't need to look at it. And I still think that the first sentence already says that, that it's more technical to be saying that it must be announced publicly is different from the document is public. Once announced, I understand your... procedural question, but it seems that we all believe that it is required to be public, that in our process it will be public, and we will just check that we don't need to take action now to make it public. So I don't hear a motion on this point. We appreciate your comment, but we can confirm it, but I don't hear a motion, and I think we're going to move on. Back to Commissioner Hansen's point, which we didn't yet act on.
So the motion is to delete 3D.
I'm surprised if you remember what it was.
Second. Oh.
No, you said maybe we should have a motion, but we didn't act on it, and Mr. Kopel commented on that, and then he asked if he could go on to something else. There's definitely not a motion. If you'll just hang in there.
There is now.
We now have a motion made and seconded. And we have received comment on the subject, unless you want to add something to that. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay.
Did we finish decision point 25 then?
No.
We need a motion on 25, don't we?
Yes.
Okay, so that was a sub item,
right.
Not 25
yes.
itself. Okay,
and now
25.
I would make a motion that we accept decision point 25.
Second.
Public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay. The next item relates to public priorities. We had some discussion about this. We have a memo from the staff sharing reminding us of some of the work that we have done on each of these items and proposing a new priority order for the items and some additions and reasoning for why we might do that. But do you want to add to that, Mr. Sinclair?
No, just briefly, if any of the commissioners would like a copy of the email that I sent you last week on this, I have them. Commissioner Hansen, I wasn't sure you wanted to share yours, so I have copies if you'd like the other commissioners to have your comments.
That's fine.
If you wanted.
I read it but didn't print
okay.
it out, so I would.
And the only other thing I had to say is I had a conversation about these with Commissioner Harriman, and her recommendations tracked the ones that I actually made in my email to all of you.
Yeah, just so that I understand, these suggestions are within these priorities. Here are some specific topics that we might look at.
Talking about my memo?
Yeah.
Yes, what I did was I responded to Executive Director St. Croix's memo and made my own list of suggestions, which somewhat tracks his, but not
entirely, and I amplified with some bullet points as to what I was, how I would interpret these broad categories.
And so your numbering is a suggested reordering of the
yes.
priorities.
So
everybody have them?
So if I could, what I did was I took, let's see, Mr. St. Croix's first one was education,
and technology.
No, for this year. That was last year. So for this year, Executive Director St. Croix's suggested list is education first. And then communications with the public second. I actually combined those two and created education and communication with the unspecified general public. So I combined his one and two and made that one. Then
one and three.
One and two.
You're looking at past years. Both. This is October 09. Communications is number three on both of these.
Last year's priorities were. So this year's priorities are in the back.
Got it. Okay. Sorry. Yep.
So I'm just going to run through this again. Executive Director St. Croix's list for this year, suggested list, is education, communications with the public, enforcement, campaign finance, and possibly consultant ordinance. So what I did is I took essentially his one and two, education and communications with the public, and turned them into education and communication with the general public, defining them as the same, basically. Two, my two is enforcement, which is Executive Director St. Croix's three, because I combined his one and two. And then four on Executive Director St. Croix's list is campaign finance. I left that as four. And then five, I picked up Executive Director's possible consultant ordinance and added that in as my five. So not a lot of change. The order is the same. I just combined education and communications with the public. And then I added conflicts of interest. That's the one that's different. And I think Executive Director St. Croix mentioned specifically proposing to drop conflicts of interest. So I'm suggesting putting it back in, which it was last year, I believe. Yes, it was number five last year. So I've kept it this year and gave you some bullet points as to various things I thought we might address under conflicts of interest.
So there are at least, unless other commissioners have general comments, there are at least two questions that I would have, whether there's any, because I can certainly see a relationship between education and communications with the public, but whether there's any distinction or other people see a reason to keep them separate, since either way they're both right at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
And on the conflicts of interest relative to campaign finance, there's both adding it back into the list and the priority between campaign finance in a year with certainly some important races and conflicts of interest, how to make a judgment about those two. Mm-hmm. Do you want to explain why you both added, I see your topics on conflicts of interest, why you would put it at that point relative to campaign finance?
I would say for the sake of brevity, I don't much care what order it goes in. I don't mm-hmm. care if we put campaign finance above conflicts of interest because mm-hmm. we think that's more of an issue this year. What's more important to me is that it's on the list.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's three okay. or four or five.
Okay. I'd okay. be interested yeah. in understanding your bullet points under conflicts of interest.
These are, and there could be many more. These are just issues that have come up in various ways over this last year or even before last year. So I just pulled items that I thought might amplify what conflicts of interest might be. For example, this issue of city departments accepting gifts, it's been a long-standing issue that we've never addressed. We've talked about it, I don't know, for a couple of years anyway. We haven't talked about it, but it's come up as an issue that might be worthy of discussion. We haven't really ever looked at it. It's something the public brings up.
Any other questions? he's got one, too.
Okay.
He's got one minute.
Similarly, the question of the district attorney can make endorsements in races, but the city attorney can't. Why is there a discrepancy between those two offices in terms of being able to make endorsements? City officials raising funds for statewide election comes up every time we have city officials running for statewide election. This is a question that gets raised in the public. And then the last one, too, for 1.126, is an issue that we took up but briefly and decided to, correct me if I'm wrong, but either not bring up again or put off. And I know it's still kind of out there, and so I'm suggesting that we bring it back on the agenda for next year and resolve it once and for all. And we don't have to limit ourselves to these things. We don't have to take up these things necessarily. It was just a way for me to say these are the kinds of things that I think of under conflicts of interest. And I actually think it's helpful to have this discussion about what these items mean to us rather than just saying education. So, for example, as I mentioned last meeting, I think education is important, but what's important to me about education is that we're educating the general public. So I think it's important to have a conversation about if education is a priority, what are we saying? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Who are we educating? What
yeah,
are we
doing? This is very, I mean, this is the kind of conversation we wanted to have tonight, so it's helpful to have your thought about it. Do either of you have either other items or suggestions that you would want us to consider different sense of the priority within the list? Any observations that you would like to make? Sure.
Well, I'm sorry, what does IP mean?
I'm sorry?
IP
meaning?
Interested person. Sorry.
Thank you.
Sounded like intellectual property. Yeah, right?
That's where I go automatically. Uh-huh. What did you
envision in terms of the enforcement piece, number two? Because there aren't any bullet points, so I just wanted to...
I didn't, really. I took what I read from Executive Director St. Croix and thought that was sufficient. And I can't seem to see where it is at this point.
Well, he says we should also keep enforcement on the list, given that we're in the middle of a review, which would require us to produce new regulations. I'm assuming that's what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the new proposals pending at the Sunshine Task Force. I was wondering if you meant anything different from that.
I didn't. I would be open to including other things, but I thought at first glance, those seem to be priorities. And I'm trying to also weigh time, given that these are all big items.
So why wouldn't conflicts of interest come under enforcement?
I think it could. I think it's sometimes more a policy question than an enforcement question, and we haven't had even the beginnings of some of these discussions, so there's nothing to enforce currently. It might mean creating legislation. It might mean having a policy discussion and vetting the issue and then doing nothing with it. So it's not yet at the level of enforcement. It might end up being there, but the CFRO section 1.126 might in fact be an enforcement issue. But I think we have to resolve the is it enforceable question that was raised when it first came to us before we just put it under enforcement and say we need to do a better job of enforcing. I think we need to talk about the policy behind it. But it's the right policy for us to have.
That seems like a reasonable distinction. Other suggestions or questions?
Not today.
Yeah. I think... well, and I think that's a good point. This is a... once we identify our sense of priorities, we ourselves may have other items in addition to those... suggested by Mr. St. Croix and Commissioner Hansen, and we will look at the ones that they've suggested and say, okay, how do we want to proceed with, which ones do we want to proceed with, which and in what fashion? Do we want the staff to bring something forward to us? Do we want to have a discussion? Do we want to find out something from the public about what it's clear about or the interested party persons about what they would find helpful? So this is by no means the end, but it is a good process for starting to put some things on this list.
But we better be getting to the end, because we're already in November. Right. And we're going to be, you know, we're going to be 6 months into the year.
The
Yeah, we usually have in the past we've had a retreat, and that comes much earlier. But
I have a question for you then about, because one way to think about priorities is that it sets the agenda while you're working on them, and a lot of what we were doing with our time was moving through things like these enforcement provisions or the CFO, the campaign finance provisions, and the lobbyist ordinances. So we can say that we want to do it each year and have it come as close to the start of the year, so that's the year's agenda, and that's what we report on in the annual report. Given the cycle that we're on now, we could say that this is for the rest of the 6 months, or that it's for a year and a half, or that we'll revisit it when we think we've made some substantial progress on each of these.
I actually think this ought to be approached in the same way that a budget is approached. That we ought to be looking forward. I don't think that we should begin thinking about setting priorities for the fiscal year at the beginning of the fiscal year. I think we should be discussing it in the prior fiscal year, so that we can hit the ground running, you know, with whatever initiatives we're going to undertake at the beginning of the fiscal year. Or we find ourselves in a situation like this where, you know, we already lost July, August, September, October. Now we're in November, we're going to lose November. And so, you know, 7 months of the 12 months, if we're lucky.
Although I would point out that even though we didn't have a current priority list in effect, we've actually done a lot of work in those couple of months, so.
Yeah.
And I would say, when I put my list together at the last meeting, I said basically the same thing. I think we're starting late. I really want us to have a retreat so that we have more time for more thoughtful discussion, and it's just not happening this year. So given that, what's realistic? What can we really accomplish in this year? And so there are at least two items on this list, enforcement and campaign finance, the two that basically don't have any amplification, no bullet points, that I think we're just doing what we're doing. You know, we're not going to do anything new. We're kind of rolling on the track from last year. And I don't think Executive Director St. Croix has proposed that we do anything new, and I don't know that we can take on anything new. If we have five priorities, I don't think we can take on something new under each of those priorities. So I just tried to think about that when I provided the list, and hoped that this was somewhat balanced, although realizing that we may start on some of these things and then have to just roll them into next year because it's late in the year.
One possible extension of what you just said would be to have priorities that require us to do something. There's a great deal of work to be done in handling enforcement and campaign finance. Mm-hmm. Operationally, mm-hmm. keeping up with all of the expectations that we have to do them right, while it doesn't have a delta, it doesn't have a big change, it is a great deal of our responsibilities for this year, and we want to handle them appropriately.
I don't mean to imply that there's nothing to be done.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, not at all.
Okay.
No. So I'm agreeing with you that maybe what this list should be is to open with an acknowledgement of there is a steady responsibility in complex areas to carry out what we are required to do. The areas that we would like to look at for change, either new approaches or if conflict of interest is one and we decide to, you know, either policy changes that we would like to consider, are there different ways we would like to educate and communicate with the general public that we haven't been doing, information that we need to get, so that the ones that have your bullets or Mr. St. Croix's or our collective bulleted ones are the ones that we call our priorities for this year, as in priorities for change. Recognizing that it is always a priority to do a good job of managing the complex campaign finance system that we have. Always important to carry out enforcement effectively. But having the sense of priorities being what in that bandwidth that we have remaining in a time of shrinking and changing staff, what can we actually focus on? And that focus may match up with the ones that you've got, you and the executive director have flagged. Here's something we could or should be doing under this item. That would be a slightly different approach. On your other point, I have, it's a fair point to get this back to match a budget. It's always, in years in which you are able to make a case for your budget, those two should align. And we can certainly aim to do that for the start of the next cycle so that the frame can match it more neatly. I see some nodding and reaction, but why don't we start with you? How would you feel if it were what you had as education and communication, conflicts of interest, those really become, whether you keep put them together or apart, those become the ones with some new attention to new questions.
And campaign consultant ordinance, because that's, mm-hmm. that's raised by Executive Director St. Croix. What's there is not only a discussion, but a potential ballot measure. So those would be potential new action, and then the other two would be mm-hmm. continuing. I would feel fine about mm-hmm. that.
Do you have a thought about that, if we appropriately cabinet to acknowledge that we are doing a lot in those other areas? Because I want to respect the continuing work of the staff and the commission on those. But all three of you, any thought?
The idea that then the list would be one, education and communications with the general public, two, conflicts of interest, three, enforcement, four, campaign finance, and five, campaign consultant.
No, I think it would just be one, as it stands, education and communication, mm-hmm. two, conflicts of interest, three, campaign consultant.
I see.
Ordinance.
Okay.
But we would be very clear to talk about the regular business.
Yeah. Well, we have this underlying discussion in my mm-hmm. memo, Commissioner Hans, right. is a memo, the staff right. memo, mm-hmm. to inform our thinking as we go.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
So, I'm sorry, it's just one and three and
one, five.
Five. Okay. And nothing new is happening with regard to the public finance piece in campaign finance. It's not like it's so, we're just administering the public finance.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. We included those. I think the basis is that this is a document. Well, obvious stuff we really did, you know, more than last year. We've already done the CFRO and we've done the investigations, but as part of this fiscal year, were priorities. Mm-hmm. We've addressed those. Now we'll move on to the other ones.
So that becomes a temporal consideration. Do we say all five, but the action of enforcement and campaign finance is work that we've done since July about those, and the ones that we have remaining for the rest of the year are the circled ones where we have some attention to be paid. The advantage to that approach is it gives us a year's work covered by a year's sense of priorities, which will then, Matt, when we do the annual report, we will be saying what you said in your October 14th memo we've done so far in this year. I like that approach. Now that I understand it, I like that approach better, and I'm looking at Commissioner Ward to see if that kind of fits his, by doing what we said last year we would do and doing it into this year, it kind of fits. Before I take public comment, are you folks comfortable with that approach?
Okay. So then the only thing we're losing is the lobbyist
right.
ordinance from last year. If we're keeping all five then on Commissioner Hansen's list?
I think mm-hmm. so, but right. moving conflicts exactly. of interest to number two. Yes?
Well, I don't know. I mean, now that we're, we've done that temporal shift
right.
thing about Bobby.
Right.
All right, I bet.
I think the work that we've done so far this year on enforcement and campaign finance are important and really set the stage.
I don't feel strongly about it, and Commissioner Hansen didn't, I would put conflict of interest below campaign finance. One, education and communication. Two, enforcement. Three, campaign finance. Four, conflict of interest. Five, campaign consultant. I'm just switching the numbering of three and four. Mm-hmm. You okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any minute? Would you be interested in public comment at this point? Or was there more that you wanted to add? Okay. Sir?
I'm at a bit of a loss. I'm going from the agenda and the language there, the memo from the director dated October 14th, and some brief comment in last month's minutes. Are there some other documents that you're referring to? Because I missed.
Can we give them
I did not understand most of that.
The policy priority.
No, Commissioner Hansen's email.
That didn't go out.
Yeah.
Right. Can we share that?
Yeah. Is that all right? It's got your email attached.
It's up to you.
I'm not interested in your email address. If this is a document that was, I don't know when this became available, but I got my packet Thursday or Friday, and so I would have benefited. All right.
And it's an email I sent to the director and to the chair. So it's wasn't intended to go out. It was intended for a revision of the list prior to the meeting to conversation. The document has your list attached to it, your email attached to it, yes? Okay.
Right.
And that's okay.
Is this or is it not?
Why don't I just read a document?
The email?
I guess it is now.
It is now, I guess.
Well, then I can read the bullets into the record really fast if that seems more comfortable, and then you'll know what we're talking about. How does that sound?
I don't need to hear. I just if there's a thing that I can have that would be relevant, I'd love to have the thing. I guess I now have the thing. My comment on the larger topic, in addition to what I said last month, is regardless, and maybe some of this is covered in the bullet points, regardless of the priority, I'm more interested in the substantive paragraphs, so tracking with the director's memo of October 14th. It's not just the topic that's of interest to me, it's what you're proposing to do with respect to that topic, and more to the point, how much of it is staff activity versus commission policy discussions, and those have, as Commissioner Ward indicated, budgetary implications, and as Director St. Croix indicated last month, there are some staff changes and restrictions, and so this is, in my view, policy priorities aren't operating in a vacuum. They're within these larger frameworks of budget and resources. So I am, as I said, interested in an explanation of what, and maybe some of this is now here that I didn't have an opportunity to review, what education and communications means, what conflict of interest means, and so
they
it's difficult to respond.
Right. The items here are suggestions from Commissioner Hansen of things to consider as we look at these. So we will calendar, consistent with our priorities, some of these topics. We'll decide whether they're things as to which we need research, staff recommendations, public discussion, interested party meetings, and at that point we will decide which ones of them we can carry forward. So there's a historic paragraph like the one that Mr. St. Croix prepared that says what we have already done on these.
Okay.
Now that we have these suggestions in this ordering, we'll come back and simply say, let's talk about education in this way at a meeting in a certain month. Let's talk about the conflict of interest items, or one of the items, or items as they are ready, or whatever it is. So you will see those possibilities going forward. These are suggested topics within them. We certainly now will attend to those, but we're not saying we will do every one of these, but they are part of what we might do under that priority, and you know, and we're saying which priority order we're in. Is that the same understanding the other commissioners have? That these are suggested but not decisions to do these things. So they will all come back consistent with these priorities.
If there's a way to provide some framework before you get to that discussion to say we intend at two right. meetings in July and August yes. to do blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
That would be helpful. And if you could adopt that as part of an adoption of the priorities, doesn't have to specify the month, but just to create appropriate expectations for what implementation of these priorities means, I think that would be helpful. And I'd also reference what used to occur with respect to the director's report. We used to have a 5 or 6 month advance calendar that said in the next few months we're going to do blah, blah, blah. Perhaps that was before you joined the commission. I don't know.
I've never seen one like that.
Okay.
I don't think this is the time to craft what that will be. Definitely what we're doing these priorities for in order to create that kind of further look.
Okay.
That kind of direction. So
that I just wanted to note that advanced calendar was very helpful where it said in March we anticipate doing these regs.
Yes.
Even if that
time
changes. Thank you very
much. Thank you very much. Okay. We're on to the next item on the agenda. Oh, on the priorities. Thank you. Would someone like to make a motion?
Sure. I'll make a motion that our top five priorities for the work of the commission 09-10 will be education and communication with the general public, enforcement, campaign finance, conflicts of interest, and campaign consultant ordinance in that order.
Second.
Okay, we've already had public comment. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. And we will follow up on how that affects our issue development and calendaring of these items. Thank you very much. And thank you, Commissioner Hanson.
Thank you.
Minutes. We have two meetings worth of minutes before you, and let's start with September 14th. Any comments or corrections? You got it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I believe we fixed the one typo you found where Mr. Marsteller's first name was spelled incorrectly.
That's on October 10th.
Okay.
And then in terms of asking for clarification or corrections, what I've asked the staff to do is at any time that comes up in the recording of minutes where we want to check something or other, they're going to red flag it back to me
okay.
to see okay. if the document needs to be changed or not.
Thank you. So if I could, let me just say I sent two requests, not so much changes on the minutes, to Executive Director St. Croix. One on page 2 where fourth paragraph down, we talked about a number of the charts where the numbers, I couldn't get the numbers to match or couldn't understand them, and so I asked the Executive Director to update all of the charts. So my question was just when something like that comes up, how do we get the new information? So we just got the answer to that. And then, if I could,
and then,
go ahead.
You had requested, and the chair has agreed that when items for future meetings are stated, we will itemize them rather than just say
right.
items were discussed.
Thank you.
That's prospectively, correct?
Right.
Okay.
So I move to approve the September 14th minutes.
Second? Anyone? Someone?
Second.
Public comment?
Just a minor suggestion. Under materials distributed, I'm not sure that those first three items need semicolons at the end.
Thank you. We'll be more consistent. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. October 10th. On page 5, about two-thirds of the way down, Commissioner Gusakuma stated that she is concerned. Complaint is being investigated, not if. Just a spell checker type change.
Okay. And
any other changes?
Charlie is L-E-Y?
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so wherever Charlie Marsteller appears in the minutes will be changed to E-Y.
Any other comments, commissioners, on October 10th? Do I hear a motion?
I'll make a motion we approve the minutes of October 10th as corrected.
Second.
Public comment?
Actually, I thought Charlie was IE. No? All right. I've learned something tonight.
We'll check with Charlie. Something else?
Yes. Some of my comments from last month were kind of encapsulated. I'm not going to take an issue with that, but I do believe on item 7 on the annual report that I did make public comment that's not reflected here. If staff can go back to the tape and try to capture something. I do believe I said something about the annual report last month.
Would you be okay if we adopt the minutes as written and amend them later if they find that there's something more available on the record to add? Is that
or,
acceptable procedure?
Or if they find something and want to just do it that says that I said something. I'm not so concerned about what the substance
is. I'll leave to the staff whether we need to reapprove them if there's a change. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The next item is the executive director's report. Thank you, Mr. St. Croix.
Just a couple of quick things. I did send you a message that the lobbyist amendments passed the board, the full board of supervisors last Tuesday, as did the CFRO amendments. Final passage will be tomorrow. I don't expect anything to interrupt that. And then our measures to extend the ban on contracting with the city to elected officials and department heads was adopted unanimously by the Rules Committee this past Thursday. Again, I expect that to go through the full Board of Supervisors without issue. Regarding Section 1.126, which is on Commissioner Hansen's list, we have brought back our discussion of the proposals to deal with those. There's some interest in the community percolating. So the proposal that we had has been dormant since February. On Monday of last week, staff went to visit Supervisor Mircarimi, and we spent time with him. He has expressed some interest and concerns, so he has asked if he could work with us on this. So we've given our set of proposals to him and his staff. They're going to review them and come back to see if they have any changes, improvements, deletions. So we hope to put a package together to bring to you that he would then take to the full board. Hopefully we can achieve some kind of compromise on that. Last thing, I just wanted to let you know about the weekend of Thanksgiving. There are going to be a number of upgrades to our computer system. Parts of the system will be going up and down. We'll have a banner on the web page, and when you log into all the different things right now, it already tells you. Those upgrades will commence into the following week. So that there may be some interruptions of some services, but ultimately things are going to be, smoother, faster, better. And because the lobbyist thing is on track, we expect that we're going to be on time with the conversion to the new lobbying filing system at the beginning of the year. Just for your edification, this year is under the old rules. So there's a quarterly report for the last quarter of this year that will be due next year. So that will be published just like it always has. And then the monthly reports will start generating after January.
Any questions about the report?
I have one question about the October 19th meeting report and one about November 9th.
Okay.
Want me to do October 1st?
Yep.
Okay,
thank you.
Question on October 19th, page 5, under Statement of Economic Interest. We have filers at 601, total number of filers 621, and then the paragraph following says that we have 11 non-filers remaining non-responsive. So I'm just trying to do the numbers and not sure if I'm reading it right.
But if we have a total number of filers, 621, we have 601 filers. Am I correct in thinking we should have 20 non-filers?
Well, the non-responsive are people we've been unable to contact or establish contact with.
Right.
So 10 of the 21 have at least been reached by telephone. And very likely promised to file, but just either are ignoring their promise or haven't gotten around to it yet.
We just say that in here so we know where.
So they can track the numbers?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what do we do once we have this 11 non-filers who are non-responsive? Like, that's it?
In general, we refer them to the FPPC, who in general then do nothing. But if it were like an elected official or someone like that,
mm-hmm.
they would find more value in using resources than not.
Totally.
They're telling us on the phone that if we wanted to start fining people, they wouldn't have a problem with that, but they're not actually interested in giving us like the authorization to do it.
Mm.
So we decided for this year we weren't going to pursue it, but for next year I think we're going to need to make a policy decision on that.
And I think the question will be at what stage? I mean, how hard do we try? How many reminders?
Let me give you one real quick example. I got a letter from a gentleman who's been on boards and commissions in the city for 27 years without stop, and he says his essential argument was, I've given tens of thousands of hours of service to the community, and you want to fine me $100 for being late? You know, he did file, but he's like, in courteous yet profane language, he told me what I could do with my $100 fine. And so the question sort of becomes, what do? You give the guy special treatment. He sort of has a point, but the law doesn't really acknowledge.
Does not have a point.
You know.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I mean,
the law says sorry, but he says.
Right.
The law says,
and he feels perfectly justified
in what he's done. And then if we initiate an enforcement action against him for a $100 fine, how much of a...
Right.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
What? How many times do we try before we identify somebody as non-responsive and let it go and turn it over to
them? Two letters and a phone call.
We're still at two letters.
Yeah, we sort of keep at it, but we also, like the third letter will say we're referring you to a higher authority.
Oh, we do send it through.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, it becomes for 10 files of people who are maybe not of particular importance, do we want the staff to just keep grinding after those folks or accept what we have?
Okay. Any other?
That's it on October, November. Along the same lines, number 3 on the first page, campaign finance disclosure program, and this goes on for a good part of the report, the bulk of the report. Many changes, it seems, have occurred in the status of folks in these tables, and I found them very useful. I'm looking at late fees in particular on page 3, 4 on through BDR and 5. My question is, I know we've talked about this before in terms of identifying this information on our website, and I guess I still would like this to be more visible on our website. I looked at this list and I went to the website to see how it appeared, because there are some people on this list who are elected officials who are running or about to announce that they're running for office. In particular, those folks, I would think there's an extra, there should be an extra effort on our part and an extra interest on the part of the public to know what the status is of the folks on this table. There are people on here who have been around for a very long time and have been in office for a very long time or assisting those in office. So in public positions, and yet that there's not enough pressure on them from kind of the perspective of, aren't they embarrassed? So the question is, can we put this list on the website in some clear, identifiable, quick and easy fashion? I actually looked for some of these people. The only way I could find someone was to print it, you know, type in their name and then pull up their record, and still didn't actually make a whole lot of sense to me, let alone somebody who's never done this before. So I guess that's a request. Sorry, the last thing I want to say is, do you have any idea why so much progress was made in, I guess we could call it progress, but a lot of this is due to waivers. So what happened that so many waivers were approved, so many people are now in collections, and there's a qualitative difference in this report from the last one.
Well, there was a backlog of waiver requests that staff processed, and then Chastity approved them, but the report came to her that the day she left for an extended meeting. So there was a 3-week timeout on that because she really hadn't had anything. Unfortunately, she's my mentor for very long
time. Okay. Any thoughts on the website and publicizing this a little bit?
I'll talk to the staff. We'll just put our heads together.
If you have any suggestion about where you looked for it or what you would have tried as a sort of practical way to do it, you might share that with Mr. St. Croix. Just tell him what you thought would get you to it, because that might be helpful as they try and figure out how it should be found.
The best thing I can think is to say, you know, non-filers, or, you know, the title of people who have not... we haven't been able to collect on, or who haven't filed, okay. And then how long and the amount is very,
okay.
Would be
yeah.
Very useful.
Yeah. I was okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Public comment on your report? Do we take public comment on? Yes. Public comment on the executive director's reports.
I think my comments are mostly in line with Commissioner Hansen's. In this case, I already mentioned the 5 or 6 month
yes.
Advance calendar. And I have commented many times about these delinquent filers. It appears that these late fees in tables 1 and 2 relate only to campaign finance. I've asked in the past for a more comprehensive list of all of the people with outstanding issues, whether they're fees, fines, forms, anything else starting with F, you know, that sort of thing, and that be as prominent on the website as possible, included in the reports either monthly or periodically, and with an indication of what those individuals or entities may not do until those things are corrected, because there were increased consequences to some of these individuals that they could not receive, I believe, a certificate of election to office if they still owed you something. And as Commissioner Hansen indicated, there are potential candidates, known quantities here. And I'm less concerned with the 98 and 60 buck things than the several thousand of people that have the resources or should know better or whatever. And so if there's some way, and maybe we need to make this an agenda item so that we can have a more extensive discussion about it, how do you get at these folks? I'm sure staff has spent a lot of time on it, but how can the commission and how can the public better get at these folks and reduce this list? This is, to my way of thinking, a civic embarrassment that we have so many people who have been on here for so long. It's not a reflection of the staff. It's a reflection of these folks and their activity, but we should find ways very actively to be working this list down and, you know, create a hall of shame and so indicate who's in it. I look forward to a more extended discussion about that. I'd encourage you to make this an agenda item.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, the final item is items for future meetings. Thank you. Items for future meetings. Obviously, the things that we've put within our priorities will be items for future meetings and discussions among the commissioners. Is there anything else we need to flag right now? And we will put them in the minutes.
Thank you. I would just add, I would concur with Mr. Pilpil. It would be great to have a discussion about the website or just a report back that it's done. I'd love a report on how we're going to continue to engage the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force. We don't lose that one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda.
Promise there might be. I also noticed one other typo on the minutes from the October meeting. The date was wrong. I hope that'll be caught. Just to comment more generally and positively that there was actually an election last week for the few of us who voted, and although it did not garner as much public attention in the media, my experience was that there were few, if any, problems either with the Department of Elections or with the Ethics Commission. And so although, again, it was pretty under the radar, I think the compliance level with the various laws was pretty high, and the staff is to be commended for keeping that on track. I would hope that as additional disclosure requirements kick in, that we would attend to those in future cycles, because there hasn't been as much attention to ballot measure campaigns as to candidate campaigns, and I know that some of those disclosures will be made in future cycles, but I just wanted to note that this was a pretty successful election, albeit pretty low-key, and thanks to the good work of the staff.
Thank you. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you very much to the staff.
Thank you.
Careful readers all. David, what was the mistake?